We've been so programmed that the idea of giving someone an inch will automatically beget a mile that we don't realize that if we just give an inch, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to take a mile. It could mean it's you're 1 inch closer to that other person.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get a million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and I am so excited to share our guest with you today. His name is Joe Pardavila, and he has spent decades in media creating more than 10,000 hours of audio content across podcasts and radio. He was a longtime personality on New York's 95.5 PLJ with the Scott and Todd in the Morning Show, where he honed his skills as both a storyteller and communicator. He is the author of the best-selling book, Good Listen, Creating Memorable Conversations in Business and Life, which offers practical insights on mastering the art of conversation. Today, through his videos, blogs, and podcasts, Joe shares unfiltered takes on creativity, communication, and becoming a better human, all things that we love at the Daily Helping. Joseph Pardavila. Pardavila.
Close enough.
No, it's never close enough. It's Pardavila, right?
Yeah. It's all good, Doc. Listen, Doc, I've been saddled with that name for my entire life. And, you know, there's two types of people on the planet, people that are oversensitive about their names and those that are not. I fall in the not camp. So
appreciate that. But nonetheless, welcome to the Daily Helping. It is awesome to have you with us today. And, you know, yours is kind of an interesting one because most of the people who come on the Daily Helping, you know, a publicist will say, hey, you know, my author's got a book coming out or. But you just popped up, an algorithm brought you to me. You popped up in the LinkedIn feed and your book seemed really interesting and I think important because we're living in a society where people don't listen and people aren't having the conversations we ought to have. So I'm excited to talk about the book, but you have a long history in radio. And so I just kind of want to jump into the Joe Pot time machine and go back in time and kind of talk about your superhero origin story and find out a bit of that. And then let's roll into the book after that.
Yeah, Doc. So I grew up in northern New Jersey, about 10 miles from Midtown Manhattan. Kid of immigrants. My mom was a Cuban refugee. My dad was a Navy man from Spain. They came here. They both met in New Jersey, had a couple kids. And my whole upbringing, Doc, I was always enamored with show business. So I was always the annoying kid putting on shows at birthday parties. I was the one doing the bad impressions, the one doing the terrible magic tricks. So I knew I wanted to get into that. Like I wanted to either be on a screen or be on the big screen, what have you. But as you can imagine, growing up in New Jersey with zero connections to Hollywood or show business or media in general, I just did what I could do. So what I started was I went to a state college in New Jersey called William Patterson. They were known for their communication program. They had just built this, at the time, state-of-the-art radio and television studio. So I was like, well, if I'm going to try to find a way into media, entertainment, this is probably a good start. So I go to school, and it was funny. The first day I get there, I go right into the TV studio because like any kid born, you know, growing up in the 80s, I was a TV kid, you know, latchkey, like stay at home watching, you know, I Dream of Jeannie and Brady Bunch reruns all day. So I went to the TV studio. I said, hey, I want to be on TV. And they're like, oh, yeah, we don't let freshmen on TV. I mean, if you want, you could help out, but you really can't be on. I'm like, all right. So I walk down the hall to the radio studio and I go, hey, I want to be on the radio. And they're like, what time you want to go on? So that was the start of my radio career. And I really loved it. And not to say that I didn't love radio. I was the nerd who would listen to New York Mets games in the middle of the night when they were playing on the West Coast at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning in my bed, listening to radio, loved radio. So as I started my college career doing this, I had terrible self-awareness as a kid, like many of us. And I really didn't know, like, what I should do next in terms of, like, you know, should I go for apply for jobs, internships and stuff like that? And for some reason, I said, you know what I should do? My junior year of college, I'm going to apply for an internship at a radio station, and I'm going to see if I like radio. This was not intentional. This was not a master plan, Doc. I was like, let me just fill it out and try it. So I send out the applications. I get a call back from this radio station called WPLJ. Very iconic, was in the market for 40 plus years. We can get to its demise later. But so they call me in for an internship, take the gig, and I love it. I was having a blast. I'm like, this is great. I've loved working in radio. And as my internship's about to end, they say, hey, listen, we just had one of our employees left and we really need to fill the position. For top 40 hot AC stations, the summertime is their most important and hectic promotion schedule of the year. And they need to fill the position quick. And they said, hey, listen, we'd love for you to take this job, but you'll have to leave school because it's a full-time job. And I said, absolutely. Great. I wasn't a big fan of college. Let me try this out. I was still young. I think I was 19 at the time. I was like, you know, if this doesn't work out, I'll just go back to school. Well, I didn't, Richard, because what happened then was I was hired full time and then I worked my way up through the company, ended up with the morning show within 18 months of that. And then I spent the next 24 years working on the morning radio show there in New York City.
It's a fun story. And it's one of those things where you just kind of in the right place at the right time, found something you love, you could take or leave college, and then 24 years go by. I'm curious, now you mentioned the radio station's demise. Did you leave that job because the radio station went under? Like what happened there?
So I was very fortunate to be working in radio during its heyday. So I think my first year full time was like 1997. So 97 to early 2000s, again, I was like 19. So I was a kid. It was the salad days of Radio Doc. I was, you know, we were giving away cars. We were giving away, like, we had a $1 million giveaway one time. Like, it was like ridiculous. Like, our prize closet looked like straight out of Wheel of Fortune and Price is Right. We had all, just full of prize. It was just the heyday for radio. My host, who mentor Scott, was making $2 million at the time when, like, someone making $2 million is someone like making $20 million now. Like, it was crazy times. And we were owned by Disney at the time. So it was an amazing company to work for. One, we got stock options, which I still have, and Disney stock has been pretty decent. It's had some ups and downs. But two, Disney didn't care about radio. They essentially bought our radio station during the ABC transaction when they bought ABC O&O TV stations and all the networks and stuff like that. So they were like, we don't really care. You guys do what you want. They would give us our budgets. They would be like, this is, you know, just don't get us in trouble. Don't do anything stupid. Just do your thing. So it was like amazing. It was like being like the, what do you call it? The loonies running the asylum. Like, that's what it was. It was just like fantastic. But as time went on and Disney leadership changed from Michael Eisner, if people remember, was like the longtime CEO of Disney, to Robert Iger. And Robert Iger, as you know, most CEOs, they come in, they want to lean out the company. They want it to be just about parks and movies and network TV. What are we doing at radio stations? So they sold us, and they sold us to a radio company that immediately went under. They sold us to another radio company who had us for about 5 years. And then this is when we get to the low time of radio, when most radio companies were not making all that much money. And the only way that companies could make money was if they sold radio stations. And at the time, the only people buying radio stations were nonprofits. So that's what happened to us. A nonprofit company called EMF, the Education Media Foundation. It sounds like non-secular, but it's a Christian broadcasting company. It's a company that does like Christian rock all around the country. So what happened was they wanted to transmit their signal into New York City. So they bought our radio station, and PLJ was no more May 31st of 2019. And that's what kind of started my journey into full-time podcasting.
And so you had this, I'll call it an opportunity, right? Like you were doing this thing, the radio stations get bought and sold a few times until finally this new one bought it. It was going to totally shift the platform of what you guys were doing, and you're out of a job. So what was the podcast? Did you try and look for other jobs, or was it just, you know what? Like, I'm going to be a podcaster. Like, how did that transition look?
So, Doc, what essentially happened was this was around the time where everyone was getting really thin. Like, you know, most radio stations went from having, you know, 100 staff members to like 30. Like, it was just so opportunities for jobs, especially in New York, were pretty hard. So I did look around. I had done morning radio where I was waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning for over 20 years. So it's not like I was like, oh man, I can't wait to get back into morning radio and do that again. But that was sort of what I knew best. But there was nothing out there, Doc. There was really nothing. And so towards the end of my terrestrial radio days, I started dabbling in podcasting because that's where I saw the track going. And so me and my wife always loved the idea of possibly like building a house, living, you know, near like a beach, somewhere like a night, maybe coastal, southern, what have you. And here's a funny story, Doc. I was watching Late Night with Jimmy Kimmel. So Jimmy Kimmel Live. And he has Danny McBride on the show. Danny McBride, the famous actor, who coincidentally lives in Charleston and produces all his TV shows.
Yeah,
in Charleston. You know, Vice Principals, the most recent one, Gemstones. And he's on the couch talking to Jimmy. And Jimmy says, so you're like unusual from the Hollywood sect is that you don't live in Hollywood or L.A. or California. You live in Charleston. And he goes into the story about how he came to love Charleston. He wasn't originally from Charleston. I think he's from Georgia. And said, this is a great place for me to raise a family. He had just had young kids. And I was like, Charleston. And me again, Doc, as a unself-aware New Yorker, I'm like, where is even Charleston? Like, where is it even on the map? And I'm like, huh, that sounds kind of cool. Like, it's the fact that you have, like, this city that's by a beach. And it's sort of like this little blue dot in a big red state. I'm like, interesting. So I widened my LinkedIn search for jobs in Charleston, and a publishing company based out of downtown Charleston called Advantage Media, which is a company that started as a publishing company for entrepreneur books. So basically, if you're an entrepreneur and you want to write a book, they would do the soup to nuts, you know, ghostwrite it, publish it, all that stuff. As the company's grown, they added media services. And just so happens, around the time that PLJ was defunct and I watched this interview on Jimmy Kimmel, they were starting podcasting. They were starting a podcast program where they were going to produce podcasts for entrepreneurs. And so I said to my wife, hey, what do you think about it? And she's like, yeah, I really don't want to leave my family, but, you know, let's give it a shot. So went down here and I was hired. And my first day on the job, Doc, no lie, was March 9th of 2020.
Just an average time in the world, you know.
Yeah. Nothing going on. It was peaceful sailing all the way through. But like 5 days later, the pandemic hits and we just moved to Charleston like a week earlier. And it was crazy. We're like, what are we doing? And I ended up having to work out of like a temporary apartment because we didn't have any place when we first came down there. But through the pandemic and then time, we've sort of built a community and we're like, I guess this is what we're doing. So we did cross off that bucket list. We did end up building a home. We're about, you know, 5 miles from the beach and it's been wonderful. But yeah, that's how the podcasting thing happened. It was just one of those things where I knew that's where I was heading because the terrestrial jobs are just not there anymore. And honestly, no disrespect to my beloved radio medium. It's just not the same as it used to be. It sort of cannibalized itself, you know, with syndication and consolidation. It's just not what it used to be. And so I pray that it hangs on, but it's kind of funny. Like I'm getting like a deja vu feeling now with what TV's going through because TV's essentially going through what we did, you know, 5 to 6, 7 years ago where you're seeing like broadcast TV barely hanging on by the edge of their fingernails. So yeah, it's a weird time to be in media, but luckily, you know, working with Advantage, I have the flexibility to not only create these podcasts for entrepreneurs, but I'm able to create content on my own. Wrote the book with the company, you know, do all sorts of content on my own. So it's just a great opportunity for me to work with people, help people come, you know, to share their ideas with the world. And yeah, just using the skill set that I had honed during my 24 years in Radio New York.
And it's interesting too, because you bring a different perspective to conversation as somebody who has worked in radio, right? To the, you know, what I might've been taught, you know, with therapy skills, like it's very different, although I'm sure there's some overlying concepts.
Well, it's funny you say that, Doc, because when I took the job, I was like, oh, I'm just going to do the same thing I did. And what I didn't realize was like the people I was working with are like in the Radio Hall of Fame and like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like they're legends. And so they knew what they're doing because of working with them through osmosis, watching them, seeing what they did that I liked, seeing what they did that I didn't like. I was able to create my own sort of self. And then so when I take this job, I'm like, I'll just do the same thing. And then I realized what you said, Doc, these people don't know anything. They don't know what it is to be a host, what it means to ask the right questions, what it means to what to listen for in podcasts. So it was funny. It was almost like I was like, oh, shoot. And that's really honestly how the book came about, because it was like all the stories that I used in the book were kind of stories I was using to help my clients tell their story by sharing like stuff that happened to me that I learned from. And then that's what I was never one of these guys like, one of these days I'm going to write a book about my career. It was like, really wasn't that. It was just that all these stories were, again, top of mind because I was using them regularly to help coach my clients into becoming podcasters.
And I love this because at its core, this book is about stories. This book is about conversations. And this is what society needs. It needs people being able to find common ground and share conversations, because a large amount of the people in this country won't talk to each other if they have different views politically or whatever the thing is that's the trigger for them. And but you and I are proof here. We got a Braves fan and a Mets fan sharing a microphone and talking.
Well, neither of us has much to crow about these
not
days.
Not this year. But again, the conversation is so important. And so you've got all this experience in radio. So take us through the book. Take us through what a reader is going to learn as they start working their way through Good Listen.
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to do is initially when I was talking to my company writing a book, you know, since I was the podcast guy for the company, like, you know, maybe we should write a book like how to podcast. And I'm like, I can't do that. Like, I can't write a manual. Like, I'm not someone who like teaches through like, you know, do this and do that. And I just, cause you know, I worked with consultants and radio and coaches so I saw what they did. I'm like, that I can't do. But what I can do is share what I went through, and hopefully you can learn from that. So in the book, I hate the celebrity name drop, but a lot of it is like interactions I learned from working with celebrities. And so just little stories that even though they're like, oh, well, I'm never going to have a conversation with Russell Crowe. How's this help me? It's like, it's what I took away from my conversation with Russell Crowe or Adam Levine or Taylor Swift or Jennifer Aniston. So it's really just like using the stories of my life and how I learn from them and hopefully what people can learn from them to help them become better communicators.
So I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you to pick your favorite story, but pick one to, you know, to share with us that could be a great example. Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go.
You know, one of the things that when I'm coaching folks when it comes to podcasts, as you know, Doc, you know, when we started this podcast, you and I didn't know each other from Adam. We didn't. So to me, when it comes to hosts in terms of comfort for the guest, I learned from Taylor Swift. And so this story happened right around the time that she released her 1989 album, Shake It Off. And she was going to come visit our morning show. And the day before the scheduled interview, her team calls up our boss and says, hey, listen, we know you're going to video record the pod, you know, this interview, like a lot of radio stations do. They interview, they take the video and then they'll post it online. And they said, we know that radio stations do this. We know you like to do this, but we have a rule that you can only record the first 90 seconds of the interview. And I was like, oh, you mean like we can only post 90 seconds of it? No. You can only record 90 seconds of video so you could post online. And again, Doc, as you know this, the first 90 seconds of any interview is not gold. You know, you're lucky it's like listenable, right? So this really pissed me off. Like, I was like, we're getting the biggest pop star on the planet and we're not going to be able to record it? Are you kidding me? So I was annoyed. So the morning comes And I was standing at the board where I usually stand, and I had the videographer to the left of me, and her publicist makes a beeline straight to the videographer. And she goes, "Hey, just a reminder, when we get to 90 seconds, I'm going to tap you on the shoulder and I'm going to ask you to drop the camera." Like, they didn't even trust us, like, turn it off. Like, we had to physically take the camera down. And again, I was stewing on this. I was annoyed that this was a thing. And so I was like, "Oh, just a quick question. If, you know, during these 90 seconds, if we get to a point where we're just about ending, but we have a follow-up question, can we keep recording?" And she's like, "Oh, yeah, sure. I'm sure. Yeah, it's not, you know," she's like, "Yeah, it's not like, you know, exactly 9 seconds, but yeah, sure." I'm like, so I was like, "Great." And I said, "Well, what if we have a follow-up question to that follow-up question? Will that be okay?" She's like, "Yeah, I mean, I guess so. We'll see how it goes. And then finally I go, "What if we have a follow-up question to the second follow-up question that was a follow-up question to the first follow-up question?" And at this point, the publicist is like, I might as well have been speaking another language. She didn't know how to respond. But clear on the other side of the room, Doc, I hear this voice that says, "Well, someone woke up feeling saucy this morning." It was Taylor Swift. She had heard this whole interaction with me and her publicist. So the interview starts and Taylor is completely on guard during the old conversation. She's just like very guarded, gives your typical, you know, cookie cutter answers to cookie cutter questions. And she's staring at me during this interview, like every time I ask her a question, as if I'm going to ask like the most ludicrous thing. And so from that, I learned I made it about myself. And the last thing you want to do when you are hosting a podcast, whether you're hosting a dinner party, whether you're hosting a meeting with a colleague, is that it's not about you and that your role is to make that person comfortable in your home. You want them so comfortable that they will walk into your refrigerator and take your last beer without asking you. That's the comfort level you want to get when you do any of the things I talked about. And I'm not talking about just podcast. That's why going back to the point of like how to podcast book, that's why I didn't. Yes, that's incredibly important for podcasting, but I think that's also important for daily life, your professional and social life. So that experience of me putting myself before the guest was enlightening. I was like, this is about me. Like at the end of the day, Doc, we got video of Taylor Swift talking with us for 45 minutes. Like, yeah, so what does that mean? But instead I made it all about that. And instead of making sure that I got the best possible interview that day.
You know, some of this that you're talking about conceptually, I think about one of the earlier personal development books that was ever written, in Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Like this, conceptually, this is lining up, which is wild, right? Because people are human beings, right? And the way our brains are wired, what matters to us, that hasn't shifted over time. Like I've been thinking a lot as you've been talking, because the downfall of radio, now the downfall of television, the rise of the internet, the rise of social media has shifted not only the industry that you came from, but it has absolutely shifted the way that we communicate with each other. And the research is pretty clear on this. From a psychological standpoint, we are much more selfish. We are much more me-oriented, right? Like selfies didn't exist when you started in the golden age of radio, but we're in a selfie society. So that you're telling me, you know, this, I mean, the Taylor Swift is a fun example, but in any communication, right, it's what's important to the other person. That makes sense. And I love that, you know, these concepts you're talking about are the same thing was in a book written 90 years ago that holds true. So what other skills that you've utilized, techniques that you've utilized, things should people be thinking about when having good conversations with other people?
Well, I want to mention first, you mentioned the Dale Carnegie book. Before I started working, so currently I'm basically producing for my clients' business podcasts. So I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know who Dale Carnegie was. I thought Dale Carnegie was the same guy at the Carnegie Deli in New York. Like I had no idea who that was. I'm certainly aware of who he is now and of the book. But it was funny when I transitioned from working in entertainment media to business media, Doc, because I was like, what am I going to say to an entrepreneur? What am I going to say to a CEO? And going to your question is like, what I realized was it's all humans with stories to tell. And as someone who's either hosting a show, whether it's on YouTube or a podcast, or someone is hosting a meeting, it's all about helping those other people tell their stories because everyone has a story to tell. They may not know how to tell it, So that's why a good host is able to get that out of someone. But I think that's the human side of it is one of the things that, you know, I talk about this in the book, but it was also what I learned about, you know, making the switch from entertainment to business. It's like, you think to yourself, like almost like that imposter syndrome, like I can't possibly talk to someone who has a SaaS company. Again, Doc, I had no idea what SaaS meant. I do know now, and now it's software as a service, but no idea. But it didn't matter because all I knew was this person is someone who's accomplished something. You know, I wouldn't be talking to them or I've been working with them if they have not accomplished something. Well, to accomplish something, there's a story behind it. And we all have a story of what we've accomplished. Me, my little speck in the planetary world of media, is my story. And you have your story. And so anyone who does podcasts or does a YouTube show where they're talking to people, if you don't love that idea of getting stories from people, then you shouldn't do it. Like, I mean, I always tell people, do a podcast if you just love, like, that's why I say rule number one when I take on a new client, Doc. I'm like, do you love talking to people and finding out more about them? And if they say yes, I'm like, great, then you should do a podcast. But if your answer is like, I'm just doing this because, you know, my competitor's doing one or my kid said I should do one, that's not the mindset I want when someone's doing a podcast. So yeah, so I think, you know, it's a long way to answer your question, but it's really just like, if that human side of like you not caring, and you even mentioned earlier about people caring about each other, if you don't care about the other person, it ain't going to be a good podcast. You could be the most clever, you could be the funniest, you could be the wisest, but if you're having conversations where it's a one-way thing, where it's you just want to get your two cents in and you want to be the star, that's not how podcasts work. That's not how, because at the end of the day, a podcast equals conversation, and a conversation is not a one-way conversation. Those are monologues. So just being able to have that mindset going into what you're doing is incredibly important. I'm just like, hey, I want to make sure that I'm here to help this person tell a story. Not that you can't share. You know, one of the things and this is actually a lesson that I wrote in the book. There's a Harvard professor who came up with this phrase called boomerasking. And it's not a negative connotation of like, you know, okay, boomer. But a boomerask is when you ask a question you have an answer to. In conversations in normal life, it could be a little bit gauchy to be like, oh, I'm going to ask them about Mexico because I went to Mexico. But if you're doing a podcast where maybe you are a entrepreneur about tech and you had a problem one day working with a CTO, if you ask another CEO about that, that's a boomerask. You're asking a question that you also have an answer to, so then you can share yourself. So I think the best podcasters, as you know, Doc, share themselves as much as they share their guests. It's, you know, there's a ratio to it. I mean, it shouldn't be 50-50, but I think every podcaster who's successful shares a bit about themselves regularly, or if not, what's the point? Like, they could just listen to other podcasts and they just maybe tune in because it's a guest specific podcast. I'm guilty of that. Like, I don't listen to Joe Rogan regularly, but if there's a guest that I'm interested in, I'm like, oh, he had Bill Murray on. Oh, shoot. I'm going to watch that episode. So I think it's important when you're a podcaster to make sure the other person's comfortable, but also to share about yourself as much as you possibly can.
And it is a balance, right? Like, we've all been on these. Well, you and I have been on these shows where the host will not stop talking about themselves and their accomplishments. And that gets very tiresome. But I think if you and your humanity comes out, what you're passionate about comes out. I mean, I make no bones about, you know, that I've built this show with a really neuroscience base, because I understand scientifically that if I get people to engage in the show's mission, which is to help a million people commit acts of kindness every day and post them in your social media feeds, I make the world a better place. I don't come on every day and talk about, well, this part of the brain is called the limbic. I don't do any of that, right? Because that's stupid. But what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And I think in conversing as humans with each other, whether it's in business or life, or if you had a platform, it's striking this balance of not being robotic and letting that humanity come through, because you're right. Everybody has a story to tell. And I think all we want as human beings more than anything is to be heard, to feel like people are listening to us. Because society is telling people every single day that nobody's listening to you. And that's a frustration that we have to help people get past. So I love what you're doing. I love that you've written this book. And I'm curious about your podcast. So it sounds like it's entrepreneurial driven in nature, but tell us a little bit about it.
I'm very much spread thin. So I have a podcast on myself where I just talk to anybody called Good Listen. And then I have this based on our company's Authority Company podcast where I interview entrepreneurs. So you can find those anywhere on YouTube. You can find them on your podcast platforms. So yeah, my Good Listen podcast, it's sort of inspired by the book. It's just talking to people with great stories to tell. So it's that. It's just the randomness is pretty random. Like it's,
the randomness is pretty random. Yeah, I love that.
I mean, I've got a psychic medium on there. I've got a former mob wife. I've got like a couple that's in an open relationship. Like it's just very random because, and I start that podcast every time is, you know, everyone has a story to tell. You just have to listen. And so that is, so that's the one I do for fun. The one I do with the Authority Company, it's basically me having entrepreneurs tell their story. And it's actually kind of funny, Doc. And if anyone's looking for a tip on a great way to either open a podcast or even open up a conversation in real life is tell a story about yourself first. So I have this trick that no matter who I'm going to talk to, whether it's an entrepreneur, a CEO, whether it's like an actor, is I tell a story about myself that tangentially connects to the guest. And what that does is it gives the guest a moment to breathe because they're talking to this complete stranger, like I told you. You just read off this fantastic intro about the person and they're sitting there and they're nervous and you're like, hey, welcome to the podcast. How are you? And then it's like, oh, I'm great. Thank you. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh boy, what am I going to say? At that point, that's when you share a story about yourself. And I do this for all my podcasts. It sounds silly for me to say out loud that I have a story that can connect with like a doctor who does brain surgery, but I find a story. Like I find a story in my life. Like I did this podcast with an entrepreneur who's like the dean of medicine at the University of Michigan, wrote a book with us, right? And you're thinking, what is an idiot like this, a kid from New Jersey, barely educated, what story could he possibly tell about medicine to a person who teaches med students? I did, Doc. And so before that interview with this gentleman, my wife had gone to a doctor's office and they had ended up trying to squeeze her appointment in between the doctor having to leave for a kid's recital. And I was there with my wife when it happened. And I was like, wait a minute, you tried to squeeze in a procedure with my wife? How does that make any sense? And like, oh yeah, we thought. So that's how I opened the podcast. I said to this doctor, I'm like, Doc, you guys are way too busy. You guys need to find a way to better manage your time. And then I shared the story about my wife. And then he went into, oh yes, this is a normal occurrence for doctors. We have trouble squeezing in many patients in a day, blah, blah, blah. But just that little in gave him a moment to breathe. You share a little bit about yourself. And then all of a sudden you have this natural conversation going about what it's like to really be a doctor now.
I love it. Joe, this has been such a fun conversation. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question. What is your biggest helping, that one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
Yeah, I would say give everyone grace. I think we are living in a world now where we just don't care about other people. And I say this by this. There's the phrase, if you give an inch, they take a mile. We've been so programmed that the idea of giving someone an inch will automatically beget a mile that we don't realize that if we just give an inch, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to take a mile. It could mean it's you're one inch closer to that other person. So with everything we talked about in terms of like storytelling, communicating, connecting with other people, it all comes with giving people a chance. And the only way you give them a chance, if you have these conversations, if you talk to them, regardless of political affiliation, religious background, just the next time that you are, I don't want to be too dramatic, but if in confrontation or uncomfortable moment or someone wrongs you in any way, just think, give them an inch and see what happens.
Absolutely love that, Joe. The book is called Good Listen, Creating Memorable Conversations in Business and Life. It's available everywhere, and we will have a link in the show notes if you want to pick that up yourself, and I encourage you to do so. But Joe, if somebody wants to learn more about you, give us a URL where they can find what you're up to.
All right, so I'm easily Googleable. So if you have trouble writing my name, but if you write in Joe Partavilla in Google or go to joepartavilla.com, you'll be connected to all my socials, my YouTube channel. But yeah, it's at joepartavilla.com. But luckily, Doc, I'm the only Joe Partavilla that I know of that shows up on a Google search. So if you just happen to just pop my name in the box, I will come up.
Awesome. And for those of you in the car, we got you covered. Everything Joe Partavilla will be in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Well, Joe, thank you for coming on and having a memorable conversation with me. It was awesome, and I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
Thanks, Doc. I really appreciate you giving me the time.
Absolutely. And to each and every one of you at home, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to this. If you like what you heard, if you're excited, if you're going to go pick up this book, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else. Even if you don't know who they are, and post in your social media feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.